Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program, Today's Issues, on the American Family Radio Network, AFR.net, on the internet. I'm Tim Wildman, and we appreciate you listening to this program and to AFR. And I want to welcome Walker Wildman to the microphone, as he usually is. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning, and good hump day.
Wednesday? Yeah, good hump day. Camel day, however you want to look at it.
Yeah.
As we put Monday and Tuesday and now half of Wednesday behind us and look forward to the weekend. Although, Fred Jackson, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning.
I will say this. I tell folks, don't be glad. You know, you hear the TGIF, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And I understand that sentiment. Yeah. We all look forward to the weekend after a long week of work. But you don't want to have every day be Friday.
That's right.
With apologies to Joel Osteen, because then your life's reduced to about 3 years.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's true.
Right? You need to appreciate Monday. You got to have Monday to appreciate Friday. Amen?
I just remember the most appreciative of Friday I've ever been was during school. When you're in college, you get to go home for the weekend.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Those days, and you finish your last class up on Friday. Right. Those are great days.
Now, college could be drudgery. I understand that sentiment, college classes, but your job shouldn't be.
No, you should enjoy your job. Yeah,
but not everybody does, but you should not have to dread going into work on Monday.
No, and the older you get, you can put your feet on the floor every morning. That's a good day.
That's a good day right there, Fred.
Yep, good day. Somebody was saying the other day, we were laughing about this, the older you get, the more you tend to go to the obituaries first to make sure your name's not there.
I know. Isn't that true?
That's kind of bleak.
I know. Well, just to keep in line with those depressing thoughts, Fred, Allison, my wife and I, we were, getting ready this morning, and she watches our grandchildren a couple days a week. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I got out of the shower and getting ready for work, and my birthday's coming up, March 6th.
Oh, that's right.
Well, today's March 1st, right?
Holding on 39?
No. So I said, to her, today's March 1st, right? She goes, yeah, March 1st. I said, so I'm 5 days away from 50. I know this seems young to you, Fred, but 54.
Oh,
so I was born in 1963. I know, but still, I told her, I said, you know what? The reality is this train is headed downhill. Say goodbye to the mountaintop, because from here on, I remember when my granddaddy, I was a small child, my granddaddy, do y'all care about this?
Yeah, I want to hear it.
If you don't, act like you do, okay? My granddaddy turned 56, and we went to his house, and I was just a child. I forget, I was real young, but anyway, I remember him putting the candles. This is all I remember. You know how you have little flashbacks of your childhood that you can barely remember? I remember them putting the candles up there. It said the numbers 56 on his cake. And I remember looking at him going, man, this guy's like Moses. This guy's lived to be 56. My granddaddy's ancient, man. Yeah. And I'm sitting here going, I'm 54, and I'm 2 years away from being Moses myself here. But anyway,
nowadays with health improvements, people can legitimately expect to live 75, 80, 85.
Yeah, but that still means my train's headed downhill, however you look at it. And I personally don't want to live to be 100.
So is 50 like the middle ground? Huh? So I'm still going uphill?
No. People in their 50s call themselves, quote, middle age. That means. So,
well, 50 is that age when you get that letter in the mail from the AARP. I don't know how they get your name.
Yeah. But they're getting ready for you. They're hunting you down already.
And they're doing it, I guess, to be nice, but you get that letter in the mail. No. Wait a minute. Retired person?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're getting older, man. All right. So anyway, thank you for indulging me on my realization this morning that, you know, that it's you don't want to take a pessimistic view, but it's, you know, 54, you know, you're cruising to 64, then I'm where you are. What are you, 60?
63. Coming up on 63.
You're going to qualify for Social Security here before long.
Real soon. We're talking about that the other day.
If this was a female, she would have had her feelings hurt. Women don't like you asking about their age or their weight. I've noticed that.
We want to end this discussion on a positive note.
Right,
I had an uncle who lived to 105.
Oh, wow.
So
in good health?
And he lived in good health. He was driving the car up until he was 90, still gardening, doing all that good stuff. His name was Frank. And you know what? Here's a funny thing. He was carried out of church on a stretcher when he was 50. He had a heart attack. And, of course, the people in the congregation said, I wasn't there, obviously. But they said, you know, oh, Frank, that's it. So he got early retirement. He worked for the government. At 50, he got early retirement. Well, he fooled them. He lived for another 55 years after that.
He made more money in retirement than he did in his early years.
It worked out really well for him.
So the moral of that story is I need to move to Canada.
My heart's hurting, actually.
Move to Canada, fake a heart attack, and I'm set.
There
right?
you go.
Okay.
Then you head to Florida in the wintertime.
Then you head to Florida. Yeah, exactly. Oh, me. All right, Walker, what are we going to be doing today on our Facebook page?
Well, our listeners and our supporters can go to our Today's Issues Facebook page and watch the show there and also listen. You can comment on it. If you're one who likes your opinion to be heard, then you can go let your opinion, go voice your opinion on our Today's Issues Facebook page and also all the articles that we discuss here from One News Now and other media outlets will be posted on Today's Issues Facebook page.
Facebook page for Today's Issues. Go there and comment and access the stories that we talk about. Leading the news is the speech by the President of the United States, Donald Trump, last night. Right, Fred?
That is it. And open up with true confession. I had low optimism about the quality of the speech he was going to give last night.
Low expectations.
Low expectation. Mm-hmm. And it's based on, you know, I guess we've been listening to Trump speeches for quite a while now, for a year and a half, 2 years almost. Mm-hmm. And after a while, they start to get a little bit repetitive. And
as most all politicians do. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I thought it was going to be another kind of stump speech, slightly modified, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. Now, there were some elements in the speech, but as the evening went on and I was listening, I became refreshed. And I said, wow. And this man is giving a speech that is touching hearts out there on mm-hmm. so many different fronts. And I began to realize once again, he's not a politician. He's a real guy mm-hmm. that's up there from the real world and that he is saying exactly what he's been saying for a year and a half. He's going to do these things. Mm-hmm. And so it was at the end of the night, Chris Wallace, one of the show hosts at Fox News, he assessed it this way, and I guess he put it succinctly. He said, Donald Trump became president of the United States tonight with that speech. He blew people away with the quality of that speech. I am told he was working on it up to 6:15 last night. They were sitting in the Oval Office putting the final touches on that speech mm-hmm. until 6:15 last night. And then if you caught when he was put in limo one, as they call it, from the White House over to the Capitol, he was still in the back seat with the light on, still going through the speech. You could see his lips, and he had the speech in front of him. Mm-hmm. It was quite a speech, and we want to play you some of the elements of that speech last night. Obviously, we can't play them all, but we want to play some excerpts. And the first one we want to is number four, Brent, with what he had to say about, and you ready for this? What other presidents would be afraid to say, Islamic terrorism.
Our obligation is to serve, protect, and defend the citizens of the United States. We are also taking strong measures to protect our nation from radical Islamic terrorism. According to data provided by the Department of Justice, the vast majority of individuals convicted of terrorism and terrorism-related offenses since 9/11 came here from outside of our country. We have seen the attacks at home, from Boston to San Bernardino to the Pentagon, and yes, even the World Trade Center. We have seen the attacks in France, in Belgium, in Germany, and all over the world. It is not compassionate, but reckless to allow uncontrolled entry from places where proper vetting cannot occur.
So there you have it. He kind of laid it out there, kind of without talking about his refugee program.
Right.
He laid it out there that, you know, Islamic terrorism is real,
mm-hmm.
and it's a real threat to our country. And here's the reason we have to have real good vetting
right.
before we allow these people to come to our country.
What that lets me know is that he's still just as serious about his executive order that's hung up in the court system now mm-hmm. about getting that implemented.
Yes.
And maybe that means issuing another executive order or challenging it in the court system. But he reiterated the exact same thing that he put in his executive order. And so that's good to see him not softening or backing down from that.
Oh, absolutely.
What else you got?
Well, also, I think one of the most moving moments of any, and it is, again, it wasn't formally called a State of the Union address, but it was pretty well like that.
Isn't that because it was his first address to Congress?
Exactly. So they couldn't call that formally, but it was a message to a joint session of Congress. One of the more moving moments is when he paid respect to the widow of Ryan Owen. She was there last night. Ryan Owen died about 35 days ago. He was the Navy SEAL involved with that raid in Yemen. And he died in that raid. And last night, President Donald Trump brought that raid to the forefront, told the audience that Ryan Owen did not die in vain, and then he paid tribute. And if you didn't see this on television, folks, you got to find it on YouTube for that moment. But we wanted to play you a little bit of that.
We are blessed to be joined tonight by Corinne Owens, the widow of U.S. Navy Special Operator Senior Chief William Ryan Owens. Ryan died as he lived, a warrior and a hero, battling against terrorism and securing our nation. I just spoke to our great General Mattis, just now, who reconfirmed that, and I quote, "Ryan was a part of a highly successful raid that generated large amounts of vital intelligence that will lead to many more victories in the future against our enemy. Ryan's legacy is etched into eternity." Thank you.
And it was at that point that the camera panned up to the audience there where Ryan Owen's widow was there. And you see her in tears, and she's looking skyward. And the applause in the end of that segment went on, they say, for 2 minutes, which was the longest standing ovation most people that can remember at a State of the Union type address. It was an incredible moment mm-hmm. in that speech. And, you know, the Democrats who basically sat on their hands most of the night, most of them got up to applaud at that point. It mm-hmm. was a tremendous moment.
Well, what was interesting is beyond that, there were other times where the president said things that you would think that everyone could agree on, such as bringing jobs back to America, simple things like that. And the Democrats sat there and had nothing, no explanation, no emotions towards it.
No, there were some moments last night when the camera panned, for instance, on Nancy Pelosi, minority leader in the House, and she looked not angry. She looked perplexed because, okay, what am I supposed to do? He's saying some really good things here. And I don't want to applaud,
right.
But the reality is this is a terrific speech.
Yeah.
And I want to play you this other cut of Professor Lara Brown. She's a professor at George Washington University. George Washington University is not a conservative university. But this is how she assessed this speech by President Trump last night.
My first impression was that President Trump, in fact, delivered, that he really did do the speech that people in sort of the country and in politics expect presidents to do before a joint session of Congress.
It's been a little over a month.
He was determined, but at the same time, kind of calm and reassuring. He was, in fact, reaching out to Democrats and arguing that it was time to put sort of the trivial fights behind and unify a country. He even began by really saying that we needed to unite against the hate crimes that we have seen recently. So from my perspective, it was quite an extraordinary effort on his behalf to stick to the script and to really step up to what is the office of the presidency. Well, I think there was a significant shift on the president's part to not only be more presidential, but to attempt to reach across the divide and really put Democrats in kind of a rhetorical corner and say, well, if you don't work with us, you're really making it so that America can't be great again. This is where Democrats were unnerved tonight. I think if you looked at their expressions in the chamber, they were wanting a sort of wildly, you know, raving, rambling president, one that sounded more like he did at the inaugural address and more as he did over the course of the campaign. And that wasn't what Democrats got tonight. And so I do think many Democrats are going to be uncertain about what is the best response for them going forward. What was fascinating to me this evening was actually how much President Trump, instead of proposing in some ways his ideas, adopted and embraced many of the ideas that the Republicans have already been floating in Congress. So that would suggest that he is willing to sign whatever Congress does. And if that is the case, then the Republicans could come away with this session with some wins and not as much fracturing as many people are anticipating.
Who was that?
That was Professor Lara Brown. She's a professor at George Washington University. Boy, she hit a point there where she said the Democrats were perplexed. Mm-hmm. You could look on their faces last night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they couldn't believe what a great speech this was. And
right.
She's right. How do you respond to that? What are you going to argue about?
Well, I'm not going to try to act like the Republicans were ecstatic about President Obama's State of the Union addresses, because they weren't. And they probably didn't applaud for at least half of the things that President Obama said. So that's normal. That's partisanship. You can't clap for policies that you don't agree with. But they were at least respectful.
Mm-hmm.
Things like standing and applauding the Navy SEAL's wife who lost his life. And also, the Democrats left early before the president had left the chamber, which
yes.
has never...
That was rude.
From what I've seen and what I've heard from representatives, that's never happened.
Oh, really?
I didn't know,
but I could never remember it happening.
No,
it was noticeable on there. It was just downright
and the reason
and unbecoming.
For it? The reason I heard for that, and it makes sense, they wanted to get out into the hallway where the reporters were so they could get in the reporter's face and try to spin their thing for the on the speech. They wanted to get to the media first before the media had a chance to assess
typically
the
and historically, both parties wait until the president shakes hands and leaves the chamber before you leave. It's like having a notable speaker.
You have decorum.
Right.
I mean, and I agree with you, Walker. I mean, I wouldn't approve of it if the Republicans did that to President Obama or a Democrat president.
Mm-mm.
You don't have to cheer. You can sit down if you want to when they say something you don't agree with. That's, as you say, that's all good and fine. But when it comes to decorum, when it comes to honoring the institution and having common decency. Mm-hmm. You don't sprint out of the hall of the what am I the
chamber of the
house. Chamber right. of the house before almost before he gets through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like the guys who dart out of church at 5 minutes till it's over to get home to watch a football game. Mm-hmm. Except this was worse.
Right.
But this is just terrible. Yeah. And the way they acted here. But
well, as I was watching it, and my wife is an elementary school teacher, she like kind of muffled under her breath, like almost laughed sarcastically at the Democrats were hissing and doing thumbs down.
Yes.
And
well, they were doing visible thumbs down
camera.
Oh, yeah. I saw the women in white.
Yes,
it was them.
Yes,
doing that and
looking at the president going thumbs down.
Yeah, yes. When he mentioned repealing and replacing Obamacare, yeah. And I thought to myself, this is like the whole right side or the left side technically of the chamber is a bunch of children, elementary children, and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are the teachers, and they're having to keep them all in line. You know,
I don't know how much Nancy Pelosi knows what's going on. honest to goodness, I'm not trying to make this personal,
right?
But I mean, I've seen her enough in action the last year to know that she needs to step down.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody needs to talk to her,
right?
Because she is
for the good of their party.
She's past her prime, well past her prime, and I don't think she's. But, you know, hey, the Democrats want to stick with her, go ahead. But the other day she called John Kasich, the governor of Illinois, and nobody corrected her on that. Now, I'll make a mistake in the next 30 minutes like that here on this program, so that's not unusual to make mistakes, when you're talking, and maybe you don't even realize it, but it's regular.
She called President Trump President Bush.
Yes, that kind of thing is regular for her to do, and nobody corrects her.
Mm-hmm.
And it just is. It appears to me that she might want to go on and concentrate on being a grandma or something. But
I don't know if we have time. Maybe we'll have to wait until after the break. But I wanted to play you a cut of Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders, responding to the speech last night.
How long do we have, Brent?
A minute and a half.
Okay. Yeah. How long's the?
Minute and a half.
Okay. Go ahead with it. So we're hearing Senator Bernie Sanders after the president's talk last night.
Yes.
I wanted to say a few words about what he didn't say because when you analyze a speech, sometimes what is more important is what somebody does not say as opposed to what they actually say. At a time when over half of older Americans have no retirement savings, I did not hear President Trump say not one word, about Social Security or Medicare. During the campaign, as we all remember, President Trump promised over and over and over again that he would not cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. Not only did President Trump not mention the issue of voter suppression, what Republican governors are doing all over this country to make it harder for people to participate in our democracy, but the truth of the matter is his administration is now working overtime with Republican governors to make it harder for young people, low-income people, senior citizens, and people of color to vote. That is an outrage. Perhaps most astoundingly, at a time when the scientific community is virtually unanimous in telling us that climate change is real, that it is caused by human activity, that it is already causing devastating problems in our country and all over the world, I did not hear President Trump say one word, not one word, about the need to combat climate change, the greatest environmental threat facing our planet.
Oh, my.
Wow. That was Senator Bernie Sanders responding to the president's talk last night. He's representing the far left in this country. And
that's why the Democrats lost the election.
Well,
essentially, everything he said was built on a false narrative. if you want to pick it apart. Lastly, the climate change thing. who, what human with at least a high school education says that the weather does not change? Everyone agrees right. that the climate right. changes year over year.
Hey, you can always win with climate change because it's always going to be changing. You're always right.
Right.
So that's just an inane point of view, in my opinion. You need to be more specific. Climate change, what are you talking about exactly? Right. You're talking about global warming? Is that what you're talking about, Senator? Okay, let's talk about global warming. Right. The planet's been cooling for 15 or 20 years now. Mm-hmm. And it goes in cycles. There's mm-hmm. not universal agreement in the scientific community about right. about even if there is climate change or global warming, there's big disagreement whether it's man caused
correct
or not. But anyway, that's nope. I'll tell you another thing: a tiny percent of Americans even care about that.
Right.
So for Senator Sanders to say he didn't even talk about this. Well, he didn't talk about it because nobody cares. That's why he didn't talk about it. It's because nobody cares about it. And furthermore, with respect to Social Security and Medicare.
Voter suppression.
Voter suppression. You know what he's talking about there? He's talking about people have to walk up and show their driver's license to ID themselves before they vote. And he's saying that is suppression. By making, see, it's garbage.
Right.
It's garbage. I don't know. I don't know if I can express myself how I really feel or not. I'll try to when we get back from this break. George Barna on the way.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Jan Markell of Understanding the Times.
I live in the part of the country that is called Little Mogadishu. Minnesota, and particularly the Twin Cities, has well over 100,000 Somalis, and few Americans in this part of the country feel safe.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
President Trump delivered one of the most inspirational and uplifting speeches I've heard in years. It was emotional. It was heartfelt. It was a moment to affirm the most exceptional nation on earth. It was a moment to honor the sacrifice of an American family. There was sustained applause for the widow of Navy SEAL Ryan Owens, a man who laid down his life for his country, for our freedom. A truly extraordinary moment, an American moment. President Trump reminded us that we are one people, that we all bleed the same blood, that we were all made by the same God. And together we will begin a new chapter of American greatness. Last night, Donald Trump erased any lingering doubts about the legitimacy of his election. He is our president, the president of these great United States. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. That's the name of this program, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson. You can watch the show if you'd like to or listen at our Today's Issues Facebook page where we live video stream. You can download the podcast at AFR.net. You can send us an email at comments@AFR.net, comments@AFR.net. I'm Tim with Walker and Fred. We've been talking about the president's speech last night, which almost across the board, liberals and conservative commentators are grading him an A in his delivery and style and, quite frankly, for his content last night. It was not a State of the Union address, but it was just like one. The Democrats, for the most part, they were behaved, I think. They didn't like having to be there, I'm sure. But they were not behaved at the end of the speech. President Trump was no sooner finished saying amen than he didn't say amen. He said something else, God bless America.
Right.
But they were running. I mean, it was embarrassing. If you have any respect for the decorum and manners, they were running out like, rats out of a barn that's on fire. But anyway, that sounded bad. That was metaphorically speaking, obviously.
Rats out of a barn. There was a fire in there, and the fire was Trump.
That's what I'm saying. That's good, Walker.
The smoke ran the rats out.
That's what I'm talking about. Right? You've expanded. As my son, you've expanded on your father's metaphor. Well.
To justify. There.
Walker, I'm your father. Of course, you knew that already.
That went into Star Wars, Walker.
Right. Hey, look there. You knew it was Star Wars, Fred. Get that. He knows he's 23-year-old and knows his Star Wars stuff over here. Okay, so back to Senator Sanders. We don't have George Barney yet, right? Okay. Senator Sanders was commenting on Senator Bernie Sanders was commenting on the president's speech last night, and he was saying he didn't hear anything about climate change, and nobody cares about hearing what President Trump says about climate change. Didn't expect it. So then he says there's voter suppression in America. This is Senator Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred, what he's talking about there is voter ID laws, right? That's voter suppression.
Voter ID laws. All it is saying is that, when you show up the voting place, you should be able to show some ID.
Yeah, so we can know you are who you're saying.
Exactly. That's all. And in some of these states, they have gone to the point where we'll go pick you up because that was one of the excuses. Couldn't get to a place where I can get my driver's license or an ID. We'll go pick you up and we'll bring you down. We'll take your picture and we'll drive you home.
Well, let me ask you. Yes. Yeah, we'll do everything for you. We'll hold your hand. Here's the other thing is if you're going to use this logic, you're going to say that the airlines apply fire suppression.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
Huh?
Or when you go get prescription medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or you go check out a library book. You have book suppression.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, because they expect to see an ID so they can tell you, so they know you are who you say you are. When I, 2 days ago, and every time I go to the airport, everybody knows us who fly.
Mm-hmm.
I have to hand my ticket through security. You hand your ticket or you scan it. Some people scan it on their phone. And then you better have your driver's license or your passport with a picture. Because you know what the guy does or the lady? They scan the driver's license to make sure it's valid, and then they hold the driver's license up, and they look at your face.
Yeah.
And they compare it to the driver's license to see if it matches.
Mm-hmm.
And so all they do at the voting booth is say, well, Mr. Wildman, I go ahead and hand it to them. We all do.
Right.
Who live in states where you have to ID yourself. Well, that is what Bernie Sanders is calling voter suppression by requiring a photo ID. If you don't have one, he's saying, man, you're just denying people the right to vote. It's as if people are standing outside.
Well, really what he's assuming is that people that are 18 years or older are not responsible enough are not able enough to get a driver's license, which I would say is an insult to those who are in that age or in voting age.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the final thing he said, President, I heard, I can't mock a New Englander, but anyway, I can't mimic one, but I could try, but it'd probably fall flat. But what he said was about President Trump said nothing about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. He didn't say anything about reducing those.
Never said that. In fact, he said the opposite.
Opposite.
That I'm going to take care. I will assure you.
Right.
So he didn't add it to the speech last night because he said it over and over and over again. We're going to take care of you.
Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I don't mean to sound cold or callous or cruel, but my view is he's saying, well, all these people don't have retirement. These older people don't have retirement. And I'm saying to myself, and that's Donald Trump's fault because? Exactly?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Huh? Maybe they didn't invest right. Maybe they didn't save right. Maybe maybe some of them lost their job. But, I mean, it's not President Trump's responsibility to take care of everybody cradle to grave. That's the liberal idea.
Right.
Exactly.
That Bernie Sanders and his cohorts have. All right, let's move on now to we found George Barna. We got a photo ID, and we know George, you there?
I'm here. Yeah.
Have you been? Do we know staff whether this is the real George Barna or not?
George, have you heard our conversation in the last 5 minutes?
I just heard like the last minute and a half.
Okay, we're talking about voter ID laws. That's why.
Right.
Tim's joking with you about your ID.
Right. Right.
Okay. Got it.
Georgia, thanks.
I thought you were going to bring up Medicare and Medicaid and say George is really old. So you don't talk about those things.
No, we wouldn't do that. Georgia, you're the founder of the Barna Research Group. But George, we wanted to talk to you about your new project called Worldview Measurement. Worldview Measurement Project. First of all, give us a 30-second description of your organization and then tell us about this new project you've been working on.
Yeah, I lead the American Culture and Faith Institute, and we do research trying to understand where the culture is and what it's going to take for us to transform American culture so that it'll be more God-honoring. And so this particular project, the Worldview Measurement Project, is the first in an ongoing series of national surveys that we're doing to try to understand that very thing. We figured, look, if we're going to transform culture, we want to know how many people there are who have a biblical worldview, because the possibility of transforming the culture to be more God-honoring, to be some group of people that's really trying to advance God's agenda, is really limited if you don't have people with a biblical worldview. So that's why we did this initial study. We actually did three studies simultaneously. We did one with the general public. We did one with SageCons, the spiritually active, governance-engaged, conservative Christians. And then we did a third one with theologically conservative Protestant pastors. And it was all geared to measuring what proportion of these groups has a biblical worldview.
George, Fred Jackson here, and I just want to say I appreciate the work that you've done through the years on worldview, because I get to teach a worldview course at our church from time to time, and I've used your stats through the years. And what's interesting in this survey is that once again you have found there's a bunch of people out there who say they are Christians and they believe the Bible is God's word, but I think the thrust of your study is finding once again that a lot of people talk like Christians, but when you really get down and you start asking them how they live and what they believe, that percentage is far less.
Yeah, and it's a great point that you're raising. It's one of the reasons why this Worldview Project is so different than any of the other ones that I've done or other people I know of who have dived into the worldview arena have done. In this particular study, we want to measure both beliefs and behavior. Typically, only beliefs get measured. And we know that, you know, you do what you believe. And so therefore, I thought, wow, well, then maybe we should also be measuring what it is that we do to figure out if we really do believe those things. Because if your behavior isn't consistent with what you say you believe, then I'm going to question whether you really believe it. So in this particular survey, we not only had more questions that we got to ask people than have been asked in prior studies, but they also got into both of those areas, both belief and behavior.
George, where can people go and read this study?
We've got the initial results at culturefaith.com every week for the next 6 weeks. I'll be putting new reports on that website. So as we analyze it deeply and more deeply, we'll be giving more and more information out.
George, this is Walker here. What would you say is the leading cause for so many Christians to maybe have a poor worldview, biblical worldview?
Well, I think that goes back to understanding how a worldview develops. What we know is that a person's worldview starts developing at about 18 months of age and is almost completely formed by the time they reach the age 13. What usually happens in churches is we focus on adults and we say, you know what, if we can get them into the church, we're going to start teaching them in such a way that they're going to be able to develop a biblical worldview. Well, friends, by that time, it's too late. Mm-hmm. Your worldview develops when you're young. So that's one of the key things I think that we need to keep in mind is that if we are not investing in ministry to children, and if we are not investing in ministry to parents who are going to have perhaps the greatest impact on the development of a child's worldview, we're not going to be successful in this endeavor.
Talking to George Barna. And he's joining us from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Orlando, Florida. I'm Tim with Walker and Fred Jackson. Fred?
Yeah, just can you give us an example of one of the questions that you asked to try to pry out this idea, are you living according to what the Bible says versus just saying you're a Christian?
Sure. When we look at the behavioral issues that we were studying, we wanted to know, for instance, do you worry, or do you believe that God is in control of everything and there's no reason to worry? Do you consistently try to treat other people the way that you want them to treat you? And, we investigated that. We looked at their speech patterns to try to figure out when they make a promise, do they maintain their promises? Do they do what they promised? We look at elements such as moral behaviors. When they're talking with or counseling people about what moral behavior is, would they say that there are situations when it's perfectly moral to lie? Would they say that there are situations when it's perfectly moral to cheat? Or is it moral to get divorced if you're unhappy with your spouse? I mean, we looked at 20 of these kinds of behaviors to try to figure out how do you translate God's fundamental principles as taught in the Bible into what you do from day to day in your speech and in your personal activity.
Talking to George Barna. Again, George, where can people read this and where can they follow your research on a regular basis?
Yeah, culturefaith.com would be the place to go. And by the way, I just want to let people know, don't worry. We're not trying to measure something that you can only answer correctly if you've had Theology 703. I mean, this is theology 101 stuff, Bible 101 kind of stuff. And what we're discovering is that even with the most basic biblical precepts, people may know some of the information, but they really are clueless about how to translate it into a lifestyle that honors Christ. So, in this whole process, again, different from previous worldview studies, what we were doing was saying, look, if somebody gets 80% of this right, they probably have a biblical worldview. They're moving in the right direction. They're not perfect, but we're all sinners and fall short of the glory of God. None of us have the perfect mind of Christ. We're all trying to grow. We're on that journey of trying to get deeper spiritually, become more mature and Christ-like. So, if you had 80% of the beliefs and behaviors that were consistent with biblical teaching, we put them in that biblical worldview category. And even so, only 10% of American adults came out as having a biblical worldview.
George, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it very much. Look forward to hearing from you more as the days and weeks and years go on, as we want to, as you do, try to encourage the Christian community to grow deeper and to be stronger and to have a more consistent biblical worldview so we can impact culture. Thanks so much.
I thank you for the opportunity to be with you.
Okay, that's George Barna joining us from Orlando.
Yeah, that's there's two sides of his research. There's the depressing side, you know, the honest side that we don't have as many Christians with a biblical worldview as we should, but it's also it's good information because it gives us something to work towards, and that is having more Christians with a biblical worldview.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We want to, as our next guest, Dan, speaking yes, of having a biblical worldview, our friends in the state of Oregon, the Klein couple, Melissa and her husband.
Yes.
They have a biblical worldview. We've heard a lot about them the last couple, 3 years and what happened to them and their small bakery called Sweet Cakes.
Sweet Cakes by Melissa.
Sweet Cakes by Melissa. Mm-hmm. And the state of Oregon is going after them for refusing to do a homosexual, quote, wedding. And much like Baronelle Stetsman in the state above them in the state of Washington. And we have a gentleman.
Yeah, we have Jeremy Dice, with us, who is senior counsel for First Liberty Institute. And welcome on, Jeremy.
Well, thanks for having me this morning.
Tell our listeners briefly who may not know about the Klein situation, their lawsuit. Just give us a 30-second overview of what happened with the Kleins and where they are now.
Aaron and Melissa Klein owned and operated a family bakery called Sweet Cakes by Melissa in Gresham, Oregon. Back in 2013, a woman asked the Kleins to make a cake for her same-sex wedding, but as devout Christians, the Kleins believed that participating in that wedding and that celebration would violate their faith, so they politely declined to make that cake. Soon after, the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries punished the Kleins with a $135,000 penalty and placed a gag order on them, forbidding them from even discussing aspects of their faith in public. So the Kleins were forced to shut down their bakery. The Kleins then appealed the Bureau's ruling on that to the Oregon Court of Appeals, and that brings us fast forward to today, actually to tomorrow, when they will actually have their first chance to have their day in court before an Oregon Court of Appeals.
So what I've met the Kleins. I met them at Values Voter Summit. They're a kind and a godly family, and this has been a long battle. What do you?
How long has this been?
This has been, Jeremy, how long has this suit been going on?
Well, it started in 2013 when they were requested to make the cake itself, and it's been in our work for over a year and a half, I think, now.
You know what? Walker, just to be clear, folks, what we're talking about here is when we're talking about we're talking to the attorney Jeremy Dice, DYS, senior counsel for First Liberty Institute, who is the firm defending the Kleins here, and it's been going on since 13. Today this is 17. We're talking about one lady. Okay, Melissa's probably in her 40s, I guess, 30s, 40s. And she had a little bakery in a small town in Oregon called Sweet Cakes by Melissa. It was just she and her husband. Isn't that right, Jeremy?
That's right. Yeah, it was really a kind of a family-run business here. They spent a lot of time there, as small business owners do as a family. They'd pick the kids up and bring them there after school. And Melissa had visions of transferring that business to her daughter someday.
Yeah.
So they spent a lot of time learning that the ins and outs of the baking business itself. Dad kind of ran the front of the house. Mom ran the back of the house. And the whole family was learning how to run a small business. So it's just shocking that in Oregon, they have not been free to run their lives or their businesses according to their conscience without governmental interference.
I've met Melissa, and it's Aaron, right? I've met.
Yeah, that's right.
I met them a few times, just dear, sweet people, Christian people. But I just wanted to set this up for people to realize how vengeful these LGBT activists are. You got a mom and pop, and that's all there is, a mom and pop operation. There's no employees, really. We're making cupcakes, all right, and cakes as for people. This LGBT couple, or one of them, walk in. Keep in mind, folks, Melissa and Aaron are standing at the counter of their two-person bakery, and somebody walks in. They don't say, "Hey, are you gay?" If you are, you just hit the door, Jack, because we're not serving you. Nothing like that. They don't. This is what the LGBT activists want you to believe happens in America. That this kind of stuff does not happen. Didn't happen with Baronel Stutzman. Didn't happen with the Kleins. They will do business with anybody that wants to walk in and buy their products, their bakery products. What you had is, it's Jeremy. You can make sure I'm right on the facts here. You have an individual who wants the Kleins to do to bake a wedding cake, right?
Yeah, and look, there's more to the story. Even the Kleins have served this couple in the past with cookies and I think cupcakes or something like that for a birthday party for one of their mothers, and so they had past interaction with them and then had passed business to them. It was only when it came down to actually participating in an expressive manner,
right,
in a celebration with which their religion disagrees, that they had to say, look, I'm really sorry, we can't do that. And then the way that the government responded to that was the most shocking part of the whole thing. The administrative regulator was the investigator. He was the judge and the jury on this whole thing and instituted this penalty of $135,000. And remarkably, the state of Oregon didn't wait for Aaron and Melissa to scrap those funds together and write a check. The state of Oregon went into their bank account and cleared it out. Now, that's a remarkable thing to think about, that not only can you be penalized, but the government would, in violation, I think, of the Fourth Amendment, go in and just clear out your bank account.
Wow.
To satisfy a penalty that it thinks is right and just is just wrong.
These are stories that happen in foreign countries.
Yes.
In China,
totalitarian states, right. Really. Mm-hmm. Well, Jeremy, we're running out of time. How can people pray for the Kleins and what do they need? What are our listeners? What would you recommend they do?
I would encourage folks to go to kleinfacts.com to learn more about what's going on in this case. Tomorrow is their day in court. This is really the first time that they've actually been inside of a court. Everything else has been going on through the regulatory process, which has had very limited interaction by the Kleins in that process. But be praying for them. This is a hard thing for them and their family. Pray for Boyden Gray, the former White House counsel to George W. Bush, former ambassador to the United Nations. He's going to be arguing this case on behalf of the Kleins, along with our attorneys up there in Salem. So this is kind of step one in the process, but no one should be... No one should have their business shut down because of the religious beliefs. And this is what this case, I think, is all about.
So this started in 2013. Here it is, 2017. You do realize, Jeremy, that the earth is going to burn up before this case is settled, according to Bernie Sanders. We're running out of time because of global warming. Now, Jeremy, thanks so much. We want to encourage people to pray for the Kleins. And if and when they can come on and do an interview with us here personally again, we would like to do that.
Oh, we'll see what we can make happen.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. That's Jeremy Dyes. Go ahead, Fred.
You know, the reality is when homosexual marriage was being argued before the courts, there were politicians who favored the legalizing of homosexual marriage and lawyers who said to Christians, don't worry, because this was one of the concerns, don't worry. We don't want to come after you. We just want the legal right to marry. That has proven to be an outright lie.
Right.
Not only in the Kleins case, but Baronel, also Mr. Cochran, the fire chief in Atlanta, over and over again, we're going to punish you for what you believe, Christian.
Right.
This is what Christians were concerned about. We're seeing this happen.
Yeah, you know, these people who are coming after Christians and criticizing Christians for not wanting to participate in a homosexual, quote, wedding ceremony because of their religious convictions. When a designer says, we don't want to make a dress for Melania Trump because we don't agree with President Trump's politics, then they are heroes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a complete double standard out there. We're going to be back after the news with more of Today's Issues. Go to our Today's Issues Facebook page and check it out.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.